to the Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline Chicago, Friday, May 13th. I'm Orion Samuelson. Max Armstrong will be joining us a little bit later as we talk markets with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, and I'll be talking briefly today to Tim Andreessen. Tim is with the CME Group, the Managing Director of Agricultural Products. We haven't checked in with the folks at CME Group lately, so we'll catch up on what's happening there. But let's begin by catching up with this week. Let me share some of the headlines that have come across the wire this week. These are just the headlines. Nordstrom's comparable store sales fall, shares tumble. Kohl's reports surprise fall in same store sales. JCPenney sales drop adds to department blues. And then there's Disney reporting a rare earnings miss. And there is Staples Office Depot scrapping their merger deal after the judge rules in favor of the Federal Trade Commission. And then how about this one? For a brief time this week, Apple was not the largest company in the world. Shares of Apple dropped below $90 on Thursday, first time that's happened since 2014. Wall Street concerned about a slow demand ahead of the anticipated launch of a new iPhone later this year. And so as a result, we saw the Apple shares drop to the point where briefly they fell out of first place and were replaced by Alphabet, or we probably know that company better as Google. But for a moment or so this week, Google was the world's biggest company, and then Apple stock recovered somewhat, and so they came back with the title. But after hearing all of those reports from the department stores this week, a report that came out today sort of contradicted what we heard earlier in the week, because the Commerce Department today reported that the retail sales in April jumped up 1.3%. That's the biggest gain since March of 2015, coming after a decline of 0.3% in March. And it contradicts really what we've been hearing all week from the department store sales. But apparently we're doing more online shopping, and that's beginning to show up. And it's increasing the problems for the retail industry, particularly apparel retail. Now, the other thing that was reported today, the University of Michigan said its consumer sentiment index jumped 6.8 points to 95.8 early this month. That's the highest reading since June. And the sentiment increased among all income and age groups, with big gains particularly among lower income and younger households. And then there was the report that comes out every week. On Thursday, the Labor Department reports the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits. That number this week went to a more than one-year high, as 294,000 applied for unemployment benefits. That was up 20,000 and the highest level since late February of 2015. So after all of those headlines, what happened to end the week? The stock market on this Friday ended lower, probably thanks to all of the reports that you just heard as we talked about some of the downside of the market. But today it was a decline in oil prices, adding to the pressure from consumer companies after those reports from Nordstrom, JCPenney, Macy's, and the others. And it did mark the end of a week that highlighted the expanding cloud of Amazon.com. Crude prices slipped as a stronger dollar weighed on the oil market, and investors cashed in on gains from a three-day rally in oil. But as we look at some of the activity today, Nordstrom down 13%, JCPenney Company down 2.75%, Dillard's, which gave a disappointing report, down 1.25%. And while Amazon dropped a little more than 1% today, it was still up 5% for the week. First quarter earnings reports, nearly all in and on average, have not been quite as bad as expected across the S&P 500. So for the week, the Dow fell 1.2%, the S&P 500 dipped 0.5%, the NASDAQ down 0.4%, the third week in a row that we've seen losses for the Dow and the S&P 500. And for the year now, the S&P 500 is about unchanged, pretty much flat up to this point in 2016. Something else going on Wall Street that certainly made a mark this week, and we could probably spend the entire program talking about the story that broke at midweek, dealing with Monsanto and two companies expressing interest in buying Monsanto. We're going to talk about that just a little bit later here on the markets, because it's quite a story. Monsanto had quite a week, really. But before we get to all of that, we are going to get over to the CME Group and talk to Tim Andreessen, and then Max Armstrong will come in and talk markets, and he'll be checking in with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services. So stay with us as we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
It has been a while since we've checked in with our friends at the CME Group. And they, of course, have the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and some other markets as well. And so let's give Tim Andreessen a call. Tim is the Managing Director of Agricultural Products. And my first question to Tim is a question from a listener. Earlier this year, the CME Group said it would close its trading floor in New York. And Tim, this listener wanted to know if that closure of the New York floor would in any way affect commodity trade in Chicago.
No. You know, the I can't really speak to New York, but what I can tell you is that our agricultural trading floor in Chicago, which is now just options, is still a really vibrant part of our ecosystem. You know, there's a lot of products that they trade there. Customers want to be able to access that market, and we think it's still a really important and critical part of the trading environment that we offer.
So let's talk about volume. Are we up or down compared to a year ago?
Well, you know, Ori and I was just thinking about this and, you know, getting ready for our conversation. And, you know, we've had some really interesting years here. You know, last year, if you remember, we kind of started off and didn't think much was going to happen. We had big stocks, and then, you know, we had a lot of volatility. And this year, you know, we ended up coming into the year with good supplies again. And the first quarter was a bit slow, but I'll tell you what, April just took off.
I saw the numbers, yeah. What happened?
You know, with too wet here, too dry there, not sure how many beans we have where, and, you know, it just really took off. Our, for example, corn and options volume were up 55% from April a year ago. Overall volumes were up 52%. We set records for beans, meal, and oil trade. We set records for hard wheat. It was just, you know, we had two all-time record days. there was just a lot of activity. And, you know, just looking at the markets yesterday, it looks like the volatility isn't over.
Is part of that volume caused by funds coming back into the market?
Oh, you know, that's more of a long-term driver of the market is the composition of the market. I think what you see right now is just a lot of activity and a lot of volatility around the fundamentals of the marketplace. You know, when you're seeing weather markets, although, you know, we kind of think more of weather markets in the U.S., but in this case, weather markets in South America, you know, start to impact the supply and demand, and then you see, you know, USDA reports come out. That's just a lot of fundamentals driving the volatility in the marketplace.
What about new programs at the CME Group that would involve farmer producers, whether it be livestock or grain? What are you working on?
Well, you know, one of the things that's a little bit different, and that's, you know, we talk a little bit about products a lot when we talk, but one of the things that's very new that we're very excited about is we just recently launched the new Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. And, you know, people that are you know, kind of follow the markets, you know, think about, say, for example, the Michigan, you know, Michigan barometer of purchasing and
right.
Some of these other economic barometers. So we really saw a need in the agricultural space for something like that. And so we worked, you know, we went out to quite a few land-grant universities to get some different ideas and ultimately decided to work with Purdue to come up with this Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. And it's something that's going to be published monthly to help give people a sense of, you know, what's going on in the ag economy.
I know the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Report comes up with some numbers. When you start this, will you have a number that we start and then we go up or down from that, or how will that work?
Yeah, so it's indexed at 100, and then, you know, we'll go up and down from that number.
And who do you think will use the barometer?
Well, you know, there's a lot of potential uses for the barometer if you think about it. You know, one, it's just a general nationwide measure of health of the U.S. ag industry.
Okay.
And, you know, particularly if you're an economist and you're trying to look at parts of the industry, it kind of gives you a reference point. So that, you know, you can say, well, look, you know, hey, this segment is down, but, you know, the whole economy was down, the whole ag economy was down, or vice versa. You know, and we think that there's a wide variety of applications for producers, traders, finance industry people, journalists, just anybody that wants to get a broad sense of how the ag economy is operating.
Well, Tim, I know you had the first release, but can you give us an idea of when it will be released? And you already said it'll be monthly.
Yes, it will. It'll be the first Tuesday of every month that the number will come out. And for, you know, your listeners who want more information, they can find that at purdue.edu/agbarometer.
And just out of curiosity, what was the number in the first release?
It was 106, so that's a good sign.
Our thanks to Tim Andreessen, who is the Managing Director of Agricultural Products at the CME Group. And, of course, that gets into the commodity markets, and so it's time to discuss what happened this week in the commodity world. For that, we turn to Max Armstrong and his guest.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, joining us in the studio here in the midst of planting season. We probably should address that first. It has gone well, a rapid start and rapid progression through the planting, but a screeching halt for many growers because of excessive rains.
Slowed down this week. We got off to a very good start in the West, as you noted, and we're ahead of the five-year average in corn as we started this recent week. Rains came, slowed things down, and it's also been pretty cold up around the Great Lakes, and I've heard some issues with some talk of some replants, some corn that went in late April that just didn't come up very well, and so it's a struggle, but nowhere near the type of struggle we saw in the East last year, at least so far, Max.
There was the perception, I know, that with so much corn being planted early, that that could enhance the yield per acre on this crop. Is that still the opinion at this point?
Well, I think that when you study corn and yield potential, when you get a lot of the crop planted, at least half of it or more in the ground by the first week of May, you have strong potential to achieve, at least historically, trendline yield. All that depends on summer weather, but when we get it planted early, we know that we'll pollinate a great part of it, maybe ahead of the hottest part of the summer.
Well, so many other factors have come into play on this radar screen with an amazing rally in the month of April that continued into the early days of May, and it has been to the surprise and amazement of just about everyone, hasn't it?
Oh, I think so. I think the soybean rally that you've just noted here has caught a lot of analysts and trade participants off guard. The extent of the damage to the Argentine soybean crop is still being debated, but with Argentina representing roughly, the largest soybean oil exporter in the world and representing about 50% of the global trade in soybean oil, it obviously caused concern. It's hard to know just what the extent of things are. USDA did lower its estimate of the Argentine crop, and it's quite probable that we'll see further downward revisions over the next couple of months.
We'll come back to that momentarily, the global supply. But the fund presence here in this market has made a big difference, has it not, those big managed funds?
Certainly managed money seeks opportunities. They seek places where disruption in thinking can occur, and this is a good example of that. A lot of traders were wondering why all of the interest in soybeans from the funds, but then the report comes and we see the aggressive demand pace now expected because of the somewhat lower South American crop sizes. Whether that demand is real, we won't know for 6 or 8 months, but it certainly turned the trade psychology here.
It has provided a magnificent opportunity for growers, hasn't it, to do some pricing?
When you look at where we were at the 1st of March to where we are now, soybeans have rallied almost $2, and we're now at a price that's profitable for growers. So it'll be interesting, Max, to see if this rally bought some bean acres by the time we get to the June acreage report.
Going back to that report earlier this week, the supply-demand numbers, you mentioned the export situation there. And, of course, you can't talk about bean exports without talking about China for a moment or two. And everything we hear coming out of China is about a slower growth of that economy, a lower GDP, lower imports of iron ore, of copper, of oil. But it is a good reminder, isn't it, that you can't talk about all commodities in one broad stroke. People will quote the CRB index and talk about what's happening with commodity demand around the world. But when you're talking about China, there's a difference among commodities, isn't there?
And you're talking about food. And you're talking about animal feed for the world's largest hog production cycle. And despite the slowdown there, their imports of soybeans has remained quite strong. And
in fact, I believe the report earlier this week was that in April, they imported more beans from the world than in any other month.
Exactly, and I think that's part of the demand structure that the USDA is noting. Now that maybe South America just doesn't quite have the supply to meet China's needs, some of that demand's going to come here.
Historically, these supply-demand reports, do they often hold surprises for us?
Well, the last couple of years, we haven't seen the types of price reaction that we saw last week with the supply-demand report. Going back 3 or 4 years ago, we had a lot of these type of limit moves, whether they be up or down, surrounding stocks reports, supply-demand reports, acreage reports. We got into a world of surplus, and the reports were less impactive on market direction. Now we're starting back into a situation where if the bean yield, we're now, I would call it sensitive to yield more so than we were 90 days ago as far as the outlook. When the demand has increased, at least on paper, as much as we've seen here, we're either going to need more acres or we're going to need the ability to maintain at least trendline soybean yield this year to avoid a tightness that we haven't seen for 2 or 3 years.
Weather is really going to be critical now, isn't it? And the weather forecasts hold a lot of promise for moving this market around.
Well, and that's the big issue. We're coming off of a record El Nino event that's impacted global weather for the last 2 years. We're entering into a potential La Nina event, and the implications of that are yet to be seen. But some believe it could cause a dry, warm end to the summer growing season, and that could especially be price impactive on the soybean complex.
You spent a lot of time talking with growers, I know. Did you sense a big lift in spirits with this kind of a rally that we've seen April 1st and then the extension into the month of May?
No, I think it's definitely been a surprise. I mean, corn is at or just below cost, and you haven't seen the type of price movement in corn that we saw. We've had some blips in the corn market, but it comes back down to the reality that we're going to have ample acreage in corn, and a trend line yield there keeps our supply very comfortable. The soybean situation becomes very different, and I think it definitely has brightened the eyes of growers, and we'll have to see, like I mentioned, whether that results in some increase in soybean acres.
When we look ahead toward that report, that'll be coming up in the end of June, is that right?
Mm-hmm. There'll be one more supply-demand report in June, and then we have our very important agri report and stocks report at the end of the month.
Growers surely have taken advantage of this for marketing opportunities, right?
I see that as I deal with my customers. I think the bean rally has attracted a lot of cash selling. I don't think there's been a lot of interest in shorting the board given the volatility that we've had, but I definitely think that cash price movement as we approach $10 here out of the field for East Midwestern growers certainly was attractive and caught some attention.
Was this a wake-up call for commercial users? Did it put them on edge, or are they still kind of fat and sassy and saying, hey, you know, we don't have to worry about this that much yet?
It's interesting. We haven't seen a big pickup yet in new export business out of the U.S. From the users you mentioned, but we have seen some oil business. You saw China step in and buy some oil. We've seen some interest in corn with Mexico and others. Saudi Arabia bought some corn last week. So I think people are sensing that, importers are sensing that while supplies look adequate right now, any kind of an upset in weather this year could have a dramatic effect. So you have seen some demand pick up here.
What about domestic users? I think of, for example, food companies and those who have to acquire feed for livestock and poultry. Has this been a wake-up call for them saying, well, wait a minute, we better start to make sure we're taken care of here?
I think a little bit of that. I think you've seen a little bit of that in the soybean meal market with the change in dynamics that's occurred there. I think there's still plenty of corn around. I don't sense an urgency to acquire an inventory of corn right now. Most folks are still kind of on a hand-to-mouth basis there because corn is moving on the rallies and there's plenty of it out there. But I think the structure of the soybean market has changed for the time being. We could certainly have a sharp decline in prices if we end up with strong yields and good weather during August. But it's definitely changed the outlook for the soybean market for the moment.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services. We always enjoy our visits with you. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you, Max.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As I said earlier in our program, it has been a week at Monsanto that I could take all of our time and talking about what's happening there. Before I get to the big story, though, let me say that the company on Tuesday of this week cut its forecast for the 2016 U.S. plantings of its newly launched Roundup Ready 2 Xtend soybeans, because the European Union has not yet approved the genetically modified variety. So now Monsanto expects less than 2 million U.S. acres to be planted with the soybeans, and that would be down from earlier forecasts for 3 million. Earlier in the week, Archer Daniels Midland and Bunge, two of the largest U.S. grain traders, said they will not accept a new variety of the genetically modified soybean being marketed by Monsanto, again, because it has not been approved by the European Union. But then today came a late story. A second group of lawmakers investigating the EPA over its review of glyphosate, questioning why it withdrew a report that said the chemical in the world's most widely used weed killer was likely not carcinogenic. the House of Representatives Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, which has jurisdiction over environmental and scientific programs, sent a letter to the EPA earlier this month citing their concern about the apparent mishandling of the matter. The committee questioned whether reasons other than science motivated EPA to pull the report and 13 other related documents off a website that it manages. And earlier this week, the U.S. House Ag Committee sent a similar letter to the EPA saying it was examining the agent's review of glyphosate, that's the chemical in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, and atrazine, another chemical used in agriculture herbicides. And the Agriculture Committee wanted to know what steps still needed to be taken to finalize and issue the glyphosate report, which should have been out in July of last year. And this is a report that has been circulating around the world for a couple of years now, and apparently there's some feeling that maybe reasons other than health are affecting some of the decisions being made on the product. Some say it's carcinogenic. Others are saying it is not carcinogenic. Then came the big story of the week involving Monsanto. They, of course, a year ago tried to purchase one of the major companies in the agrochemical world, and failed to do that. So they were the pursuer. Now they suddenly find themselves the pursued because Monsanto shares rallied as much as 12% Thursday on new reports that Bayer and BASF were interested in the St. Louis-based company. Bloomberg News reported Bayer was exploring a bid for Monsanto, while financial news website Street Insider reported that BASF was looking at a Monsanto acquisition. Both Bayer and BASF have been exploring tie-ups with Monsanto for several months, but apparently valuation concerns have made a deal tough to reach. That's according to people who are familiar with the story, but since it's not that public yet, they didn't want to be named. ChemChina, of course, agreed in February to acquire Switzerland's Syngenta for $43 billion after Dow Chemical Company and DuPont signed a deal to combine into a $130 billion company in December. Now, as recently as a month ago, Monsanto's management said the likelihood of any near-term deals, not there. Chief Executive Officer Hugh Grant said on an analyst call the company no longer saw large-scale merger and acquisitions as an opportunity. And what a time Monsanto, the world's largest seed company, is having with all of these goings on, as I said, quite a week. Well, let's take a look at where we'll start trading on Monday when the markets open again. At the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, July lean hogs will start the week at $82.65 after dropping 60 cents a hundredweight today. June live cattle gained 97 cents today, and so they'll start Monday at $123.55. The rest of the cattle months, though, traded lower today. And the August feeder cattle contract gained 15 cents today, so it'll start at $147.40 a hundredweight on Monday. At the Board of Trade, the May wheat contract ended 7 cents higher, so it'll start Monday at $4.65 a bushel. Apparently some short covering coming into that market. The corn market saw the nearby May contract down 1 3/4. It'll start at $3.82 a bushel on Monday, While new crop December corn gained a couple of cents today, and it'll start at $3.98 and a quarter on Monday. Soybeans, the May contract, will start at $10.55 a bushel after dropping 8¾ cents today. November beans down 9 for the day. They'll start at $10.54 and a half Monday. That's our time. Thank you. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.